California has a rich and varied history. It's a long one because people have lived in what is now California for thousands of years. But the official history books commonly in use until recently did not have much to say about the history before 1542 when the first Europeans arrived. And that is why there is something called the California Indian History Curriculum Coalition. Members of Native groups from around the state, and there are many of them, are working on stories to be included in history teaching for California students. Two guests join us. Dr. Cal Schneider is an assistant professor at CSU Sacramento and also a member of one of the nations of California. Cal, welcome, and tell us which nation.
Good morning, Jeff. Thank you. I'm a tribal citizen of the Federated Indians of Great Rancheria, which is in Sonoma County in California.
Okay, Great Rancheria. Thank you. Greg Castro is with us as well, educator, activist, one of the creators of the Curriculum Coalition, and also a member of a tribal nation. Tell us which one, Greg.
I identify with the Susslinen Tetral, which is the Central Coast of California, Hearst Castle area would be my homeland, and also I'm Ohlone from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay, so a couple of different nations represented here. And let's start with you, Cal. A law passed in California requires teaching of indigenous history. Before the law, how spotty was the treatment of California before Europeans arrived?
I think it. I think one of the challenges for teachers and for students was that there was very little to govern it. So I think it was kind of case by case. It just depended on how much a teacher wanted to spend time on it. The standards didn't necessarily require spending too much time on Native history. I think most of what California students get is a lot of when they do see Native people show up in history, it's with the missions. And that, I think we can talk more about that, but I think that confines people to a very narrow window of California history. So with this effort, the law you mentioned, the effort of our coalition and others is just to kind of encourage people to encourage districts, encourage teachers to broaden the story and add Native history back into a lot of different places.
Now, does the law have any deadlines? Is there any, by this date you'll be teaching this much in your curriculum about Native history in California?
I'm not sure, and I think, and Greg might know more about this, but I think it's very difficult to change the standards in California, as I understand it. I think they've had a relatively recently a new framework for social studies instruction, which is more like a guideline and kind of getting people to voluntarily do it. So I'm not sure what kind of enforcement measures are behind it. I think it's more like to show as an example of this is the way you could do it differently.
Greg, do you know anything about the enforcement measures?
Yeah, and as typical with these types of laws and regulations, there are really none. It's more than feel good, but less than a requirement. So as Cal said, it's guidelines that suggest and encourage, but do not require. And as has happened in the past, in the 1980s, the law had been changed to first allow the curriculum to include California Native perspective in history. And yet there was no enforcement. In fact, there was no funding at the time. So it never happened. This time there is a little bit of funding, so that's an incremental improvement after 30 years, but there's still no requirement. But there is a more of a public push and a tribal push to get this done in a much better way than it's happened in the past.
So talk about how the coalition came about. I mean, I understand that we have some people to thank in addition to you for this, Rose Burunda, for example.
Well, it started being an activist in California Native community for nearly 30 years in various ways, site protection, cultural preservation, those kinds of things. One of the things that's always a barrier is getting the public to understand what the real issue is. And that's because they're so uninformed about the history of the place that many of them even grew up in and were born here. And yet they don't know so little about it. That's always a barrier for almost every endeavor that any Native community engages in, is overcoming that ignorance and lack of knowledge. And at a California Indian Conference several years ago, there's an annual Indian conference about California Native culture. And I was at a presentation, one of three that year, at UC Riverside, that was presentations by Native communities writing their own curriculum. They just didn't want to wait anymore for the government or the public. They were taking on that job by themselves, often without funding, which had been done in the past, but this time they had people who knew what they were doing. In this case, it was a tribal member who had actually gone to CSU Sacramento and was in the doctorate program for education. And part of the dissertation was a curriculum for her tribal community. And I thought that was just fascinating. And it was one of three at that conference. So afterwards, I talked to the people there, and one of them was Dr. Rose Burunda, who's at CSU Sacramento, who was the presenter's advisor. And we had this discussion of the efforts of communities to do exactly what her student was doing, is writing their own, not waiting for anybody else, not waiting for funding, just it needs to happen now. It's been way too long. And from that conversation and connecting the other two people together, we had this idea of a coalition to support communities that were doing this. There was more than one. There was actually several. And they were all operating in isolation from each other, not knowing anybody else was facing this struggle and this challenge. So we formed the coalition, a kind of a loose collective of academics, Native scholars, and activists like myself, to find support for these communities to write the curriculum under modern standards. And at that time, several years ago, it was before the standard had been had started to be rewritten. That process started and was completed in the summer, I think, of 2016, where it allowed for a more balanced perspective that included the Native community's viewpoint. And it also included a very important thing that most California schools still do up to this day, and that's do what's called the Mission Project, where you fabricate a physical representation of a mission, you know, with either popsicle sticks or sugar cubes, or you go down to a craft store and buy a kit, but you don't learn that much about what happened inside that structure. And that's the change that we're looking for, is the true history from a Native perspective included, that's more balanced and accurate.
All right, I want to get to what is taught about the missions now and what you hope to get taught. And then we're talking to two members of the California Indian History Curriculum Coalition here on the Jefferson Exchange, Greg Castro and Cal Schneider. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Cal, how complicated can this get? I mean, just understanding the names we have for groups of people seems to be an issue in California, and there are many of them.
It can get very complicated. There are, you know, over 500 independent autonomous communities. That's probably conservative before Europeans show up. Even now, there are 100 federally recognized tribes, and many of those tribes are like you would have in Oregon. They're confederated tribes of people who were descended from different tribal groups originally. I think one of the things we've talked about, Greg, has been teachers reaching out to Native people locally, so they have a sense of what the indigenous history of the part of California they're in is, rather than I think it could be daunting to try to tell, you know, the comprehensive history. And there's some broad strokes you definitely want to talk about, but if you can focus in on the specificity of indigeneity, like the way indigenous people took ownership of very specific national territories, that was their homeland from the beginning of time. If you can kind of pay respect to that local story, I think you can. I think that's something to work with.
So, if you're in Shasta County, tell the story of Shasta County. If you're in San Bernardino County, tell the story of San Bernardino County.
I think so, and I think that gets into what Greg was saying about the missions not really opening up much insight into Native California history. The missions are certainly very important. They're important in my tribe, and they're important in California history, but they are not everywhere, even in California. So there are tribal groups in California who are not going into the missions. They might be peripherally affected by disease and violence, but the mission is not even the central part of their experience with colonization. Shasta is a good example. If you want to talk about Native history in Shasta, you wouldn't start with, you know, San Diego.
Right, no missions there for sure. So Greg, I read several stories about what you learned about the missions as a kid, and there are some real horror stories of what happened to natives who helped build the missions that is often not included. What kinds of things happened?
Well, the main part is that S word, which he called slavery, which is very controversial, and certainly the native perspective, most native people and tribal communities, that was their belief that the missions constituted a form of slavery. And once you went into the missions, you weren't allowed to leave. And if you did leave without permission, they would actually send troops out to come and get you, bring you back. And you were often punished quite severely. And of course, some even died after suffering that punishment. So it was a form of slavery to us. And that the missions were not built by the Spaniards, who were the ones who came and colonized. It was built by our ancestors under the guard and the authority of the Spaniards who came and took over our landscape that we've been here since time immemorial, as we say tribally, and archaeologically at least 15,000 years, if not 20 or more. So in that very short time we're talking about, the 250 years and less, our whole worldview has changed. And the point of the curriculum is to give a perspective on that whole 15,000 years. Certainly the last 250 years and then especially the missions had an outsized effect on that span of time. But we don't want to just isolate to just that part and focus on that. That's not what we do tribally. We still are reviving our culture that is very ancient, going back thousands of years. And we want to share that perspective. And certainly we want to talk about what's happened in the last 250 years since the newcomers have shown up. And that's a very important thing because it's not just history to us. And I don't think it's history to the public. It's something that's happening right now. It affects everything we do. And especially with climate change, with the environmental effects, all those things that are coming into reality now, the tribes have a particular perspective and expertise that I think is important to share.
Greg Castro and Cal Schneider are guests on the Jefferson Exchange, members of the California Indian History Curriculum Coalition. Cal, how hard can it be to obtain some of this history if it was done mostly through oral tradition? And, of course, people have been killed and uprooted from their homelands and moved to strange places and a lot of opportunity for things to get lost along the way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that is a challenge. At the same time, there are stories that are kept with tribal communities and within families that can help you help those communities put that history together. I think for more recent past, it's if not easier, it's a little bit more accessible. But as far as historical records, definitely the Spanish colonial record is pretty abundant. There's a lot in there, and it's pretty frank. I think you can use it. You can even read against it to understand Native perspectives in some cases. And then there's an archaeological record, which can be used to put together a longer timeline, I think.
Is this something of a political hot potato? Because this is a fairly bloody history at times, and we're talking about teaching it to nine-year-olds.
It is. Yeah, it absolutely is. I think, when the missions come up, that's kind of an odd thing because it gets to kind of this romantic heritage that's almost, people kind of have accepted it as kind of, historically neutral. It's like, oh, it's just, you know, pretty buildings, kind of an idyllic time in California history. So I think it is challenging, for people who have not heard that other side of the story. At the same time, it's a side of the story that we know. And, I think it's an important part of getting at the truth of what happened. So I'm all for it.
So, Greg, this is a curriculum to be vetted by Native Americans. How much of an effort to have it delivered by Native Americans in the classroom?
Well, that's certainly the preference, but it's probably one of the biggest challenges because of several factors. One is we have so many things that we're doing tribally within our communities, some still in survival mode. Site protection, protecting our sacred sites is still almost the most important thing to do. And right along with it is cultural preservation, maintaining our culture, our language, our traditions, our ceremonies. And so as important as curriculum is to tribal communities, it's not maybe at the top of the list. So diverting resources to that is very much of a challenge. And the practical part is not all people, and certainly not all Native people, are skilled and have the desire to stand up in front of people and talk. That's something that took me, probably many years to acquire that skill, and I still get nervous every time after doing it for 40 years. So it's difficult in that sense. So the number of Native people to be able to do this is limited within each tribal community, and that's why it's so important to have allies that will help us present this and will help us develop the material, because the truth is that most of the material that we're talking about is not going to be given by Native people at all. It's going to be given by teachers. So we want to make this kind of curriculum material accessible, available, and easy to access and present by teachers all across the state. And the goal, certainly, the dream, is to have a curriculum for every area. We're quite a ways away from that. But there are, on our website, that downloadable curriculum from 7 to 8 areas of the state that have been vetted by Native communities that can give a perspective that you're not going to get in the textbook.
Yeah, I noticed that there are 6 different indigenous groups as of yesterday represented there, so I assume many more are working on material. And Cal, I guess the final question will have to be, how much teaching, if any, is focused on more recent issues like tribal termination and battles like the Winamem Wintus to get their tribal status back?
Mm-hmm. Hardly any, as far as I know. So I think that's one of the goals, is to connect kind of this very, very ancient history to the more recent history, to the history of the 20th century.
All right, and so is the hope that year by year you'll be able to expand this? I mean, is there a year goal, or is it just open-ended?
Greg?
Well, the goal, like I said, is to have a curriculum in every area, and we're a relatively small ragtag coalition, but we are making connections to other groups, including the Education Department of the State of California, that after the framework was changed, they did put into place a framework for continuing the work, mm-hmm. and that's done in conjunction with the California Historical Society, mm-hmm. and a project that's coming out of, I believe it's UC Davis, to continue this work, mm-hmm. and it's called Teaching California. And the indigenous perspective is just a part of that, but it is to bring a whole more balanced viewpoint of California history, and we're looking to be a part of that and include our material in the broader perspective.
So, Greg, you mentioned getting a little nervous when you still do this in front of a classroom. So are you getting less nervous over time?
Well, less nervous over time, but I remember being taught by a storyteller who was also a teacher, who's passed on since then, and from over in Cal's area of Grayton. His name was Lanny Panola, and he was the best storyteller and speaker I'd ever seen in my life, even up to this day. He had been doing it for 50 years, and one time I sat him down and said, "Tell me your secrets. You know, how are you so good?" And he says, "I get scared every time I get up in front of people." And so he said, "But I use that to keep me on point, to keep me paying attention, because it's so important what we do, and that's the perspective I bring. I get nervous every single time. But to me, it's energy I can use and focus to bring the tribal perspective where it's so needed to the public."
And Cal Schneider, you're a teacher professionally. Have you given any tips to the people who are delivering curriculum in the classroom?
As far as how to not get nervous?
Yes.
No, I'm with Greg. First day of school always still makes me nervous. But I think there is, I think that what he said is great. There's an energy that you use, and the importance of the message comes through when you're talking to people about this stuff.
Is there one story in particular that needs to get told, for example, from the Grayton Rancheria perspective that you've been putting out there, or that you're developing to put out there?
No, we have a lot of people that have been working on that themselves. There's a tribal revitalization program. I think that the thing that Grayton and other nations in California recognize and unrecognize, the main thing is persistence. And there's tribal groups here and tribal communities here long after the last mission closed up. So that, to me, is the really interesting story, like how families put together their reassemble kind of that sense of continuity.
And Greg, I would presume that stories are still being discovered. I was talking to a linguist a few years ago who pointed out that on the Oregon coast, for example, you know, just a few hundred yards can make a difference in a dialect. So yeah. There must be just jillions of stories that have never been collected, really, to be able to be brought into the classroom.
That's absolutely true. We're finding them all the time, and sometimes they're outside of our community. There were elders in the late 19th century into the 20th century who, facing the possible eradication of our people, would share stories with people from the outside, and some of them were anthropologists who recorded those, documented them, put them in the archives, and now we can go back into those dusty, dungeon-like archives and pull them back out, and that is another aspect that we're doing now of bringing back those stories using our language because the cultural filter is there. The anthropologists were not native, so they wrote it sometimes from their perspective in a different language, and now we have to unpackage that and bring it back with the tribal perspective, and that's very important, very valuable work we're still undergoing.
All right. Much more work to come for sure. The California Indian History Curriculum Coalition, bringing indigenous education into classrooms. Cal Schneider is an assistant professor of history at CSU Sacramento with the Grayton Rancheria. Greg Castro is one of the founding members of the group, a longtime activist and teacher connected to the Saslianan and Ohlone. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.